Welcome to Wild and Awake, an online retreat where you deepen your consciousness, arouse your courage, and choose with wisdom. I'm your host, Kari Van Tine. Hello, and welcome to Wild and Awake. Today, I am so pleased to have with us Shannon Faith Walsh. Welcome, Shannon.
Thank you, Kari. I'm so delighted to be here.
I'm delighted too. This is just such a wonderful opportunity to pick your brain about some things that we talked about the other day that were exciting and got me thinking, oh my goodness, I want to share this with everyone. I'm going to share a little bit about Shannon first, and then we're going to dive right in because we have a lot to cover. Shannon Faith Walsh is a professor of global leadership and American free enterprise at Palm Beach Atlantic University and facilitates workshops on emotional intelligence and human-centered design thinking. In 2018, she co-founded the Central Florida Leadership Forum with leaders of Full Sail University. Shannon has spent time working with the U.S. Armed Forces, nonprofit organizations, completed a thesis on direct supervisory jail system recidivism, and spent 2 years as the co-host of an award-winning television program in South Korea. She is also the founder of the Poetic Justice Center, a nonprofit dedicated to providing world-class leadership and de-escalation training to law enforcement agencies and the Spark Between Humankind movement. As the Chief Leadership Officer for Global Equanimity Advisors, Shannon's passion is designing and offering leadership experiences that stretch individuals to expand their thinking and impact on their teams, companies, communities, and the world. Thank you for your work in the world, Shannon. Thank you so much. We are all hungry and in need of new ways to unpack and hold leadership, different ways for us to be as individuals. And one of the key words that I hear you use over and over again is kindness. I would like to start, I'd like to just dive right in actually on that particular word and how it's been a driving force for you. The act of kindness, where does that come from? Why is that so important in your work?
Thank you, Kari. Thanks for asking that question. You know, when we look at everything that's happening in the world right now, we really just have to think, if everyone was kind, would all this be happening? Mm. If we were all kind to ourselves, if we're all kind to each other, what would the world be like? I mean, it's that simple. It's really that simple. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, to help us determine what we need to do going forward. And if we did something that's so easy, it really could be the foundation for everything that we have in our lives. And one of the things that we learn as we get older is, you know, we learn as children to be kind to each other, right? What we're not taught as children always is to be kind to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And yet that whole put the mask on when you get on the plane, put the oxygen mask on your child first before you put it on your, or put it on yourself before you put it on your child. There's a reason for that. It's because you have to be kind to yourself before you can help others, before you can be kind to others. And so there's this opportunity for us to have a look at being kind to us. And once we do that, we have the opportunity to do it for everyone else.
Mm. I love that. I've often thought about that on the airplanes, the whole concept of course I'd want to put it on my child or my mother first. And then someone explained to me once, like, and if it doesn't go well, you're not going to be conscious enough to really help them. So you need to stay and care for yourself, not just out of kindness, but out of wisdom. Because sometimes I think kindness and wisdom maybe go more hand in hand than we think. It might just feel really silly to do this, but I would love for you to define in some way what kindness is. And the reason I'm bringing this up is I think kindness is often poo-pooed. Like it's like seen as something, you know, we teased about this earlier. It's like a very not sexy word. It's not seen as something, you know, kind. I want to be brave and I want to be powerful and all these other things, but kind is seen as something that is about sort of a gentleness about it, yes. But the way that you use it, and I know the way that you teach with it, it actually has a lot of power to it. Could you share how you're holding kindness?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you're right. We do think of it as like this very malleable, like this very soft word, like, ooh, kindness. Like, we don't need more kindness in our lives. We need power. We need money. We need, you know, kindness is power. Kindness is power. Those who possess it, it opens doors for them where others could never, ever go. It's like manners. People don't like, oh, etiquette. You know, they poo-poo etiquette. Etiquette's going to take you places your brain could never take you. Mm. Your money could never take you. Your mind could never take you. You know, when you have certain things in your life, they can open doors that you never thought they could. And, you know, you never know who you're going to meet next. You know, when you're taking a walk or you're traveling someplace or just going, you know, walking down the street in your neighborhood, kindness opens a door for you to meet a person who could be very influential in your life. Maybe they help you in an emergency. You know, we had a guest on our Humankind conference recently. He talks about the kindness of strangers and how he once walked into an airport and he said hello to someone. And as they were passing, within seconds, he had a stroke, dropped dead, and this person saved his life. Absolutely. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen when we're kind to someone. Here, this person saved his life moments after he acknowledged him. And kindness is being considerate to others, being well-meaning, and to have an intention, to set an intention. You and I have talked about how important intentions are, and setting your intention. In the mornings, I set my intention that, you know, I do my prayers, I do my devotionals, I say thank you for allowing the right resources and the right people to come into my life today. Thank you for, you know, putting all the right people and things in my path. Thank you for my assignment. Thank you for letting the light of the world shine through me. It's three simple things, but yet if we're intentional about kindness, I think it all comes back to us in ways that we never could have anticipated. And if we can have kindness in our lives, we have an authentic power that most will never experience, because most people in the world, they expect an employer to give them a title and now they have power. They expect a badge to give them power. They expect a paycheck to give them power. Oh, I make this amount of money. I'm powerful. Well, you could lose that the next day. You could lose your badge. You could lose your title. They're all gone. What have you got? If you have kindness, you an intention, you have an authentic power inside you that it doesn't matter all these things that are outside, you know, outside circumstances. You've got something that's even greater, because you know that no matter where you go, no matter what you do, you're going to meet the people that you need to meet. You know, they say your vibe attracts your tribe, right? So, you know, here's an opportunity. If you have a great vibe, you're going to attract a great tribe. If you don't, you won't.
One of the things I'm hearing what you're saying too is that kindness could be seen, it could be heard in some ways as though it was like an exchange. Oh, I need to be kind to people to make sure that they'll take care of me. And I think that's one plane. And another plane that I'm hearing that I really love that you hold and I hold as well is this concept that kindness is actually an orientation of connection. Like it's an orientation. When I stand in kindness and I walk outside my home and I'm in holding kindness, it's we all know what it feels like to walk with like a storm of anger or unhappiness. That's a lot easier for us to feel, right? Like I had a bad day and I was under a dark cloud. I don't hear people saying I'm having a great day and I'm under the cloud of kindness or under the rainbow of kindness and it feels amazing all day. But from that place, that orientation, we connect with people. It's not an exchange. I'm kind to you, so you'll give me something. But it's actually, it is a way of being that is incredibly effective. But that's not the intention of it, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's like the intention, oh, I'm going to open this door for this person. And then they pass through the door and you go, well, thank you. You know, you're welcome, because they didn't say thank you. If your intention is to open that door for that person just so you get a you're welcome.
Yeah.
Well, then that's, you might be going into that the wrong way, right? If your intention was, I intend to do something kind for someone, and whether they respond in kind the way I would like to be responded to. So having no attachment to the outcome, right? You know, hey, I'm doing something out of the kindness of my heart. It doesn't matter how they respond, because if they just walk through the door and they never say anything, I don't know if their mother has COVID. I don't know if they're having problems with their children. I don't know if they just lost their job. It's not for me to judge. That's not my job. My job is to live my life with kindness, to live my life so that I walk through the world in a way that I know I can be proud of. You know, that makes me happy. And everyone has to be able to do it in their own way. And for me, it's not about, oh, I want to be remembered as being kind, because we will create our legacy every day, whether we want to or not. People remember us in the way they want to remember us, right? So it doesn't matter what I'm trying to do. It matters to me, though. It matters to me that I live my life in such a way that I'm proud every day when I wake up that, you know, I was given this gift of life. But what do I give life back? You know, I mean, this was a gift that someone gave me. I'm not here forever. You know, I've already hit a good a good mark of this life. But if I leave tomorrow, Kari, if I am no longer with us, something happens to me tomorrow, I hope that you would say she was living life every day to the fullest. That's what I want, because one day it's not going to be my day to be alive, right? One day it's going to be my last day, and it could be today for all I know. So I want to live it with intention and with love and kindness, so that every day is, you know, if it's my last, it was my best. You know, to me, there's no better way to live. You know, life's too short to hold grudges and be unkind. And for me, you know, everyone has their thing, and I grant them the ability to, you know, and the desire, if they want it, to be in who they want. But my life, and what I want to bring to the world is, it doesn't have to be like that. I want to help people who are stuck in that, like, oh, life sucks, and, you know, it's difficult. Well, you know, when we think about it a different way and we speak about it a different way, we live it a different way. And some people just have never experienced that. And I'm a teacher at heart. I'm always learning and I'm always teaching. So that's what I want to spread in the world.
And I know you weren't always this way, or maybe you were on some level, but you've had, as many of us have, what I call like the angel that knocks at the door, like something that happens that wakes us up and we go, oh, or I don't know if you know the Rumi poem of the three angels knocking at the door. Do I open? Do I open? And this experience of like, oh, angels are knocking at our door all the time, or at least I believe on some energetic level. And we get to open the door and say, oh, what do I do with this? And I would be very curious to hear if there was a turning point, angel knocking at the door moment for you that took you in this direction.
I love that. I love that so much. excuse me. There is something, there's a quote about, be careful the angels that you pass for, be careful the angels that you pass for, they could be the strangers that you pass for, they could be angels, you know, something to that effect.
Angels in disguise or something like that.
Angels in disguise. Exactly. So I love that. There were several things, you know, I had a dark night of the soul, I think a few times. And sometimes when you get a message, I think for me personally, sometimes I get the whisper and then it comes louder. And then sometimes God, the universe just has to drop an anvil on my head because I'm not paying attention. And so I think, you know, I've had a series of things. One was being hit by an inebriated driver at one point. One was losing my best friend when I was in my 30s and her husband. He had a brain aneurysm at 36, and she at 36 had a rare heart disease and passed away. And you never decide to live more, I think, than when someone dies around you. You know, that's either an opportunity for you to live more and better, or to be bitter, or to be better. You know, you have that choice. And that's what happened with my friend passing away. I made, you know, of course I did her eulogy. I made a conscious commitment to find closure of some sort. And so my closure was doing the Honolulu Triathlon and raising tens of thousands of dollars for cancer research and saying, okay, I'm prolonging her legacy of what she was doing. And so I've honored her spirit. And that was really important to me. So doing that. And then of course, when I had my incident with being hit, I had to come back because my neck was paralyzed, my shoulders were fractured, and there was that.
And Chinna, before you tell that part, I want you to tell us who you were before then, because you told me this little piece of the story before, and I think it gives a huge context to who you are now. Do you mind going there?
Not at all, not at all. So, you know, I'd been in corporate for many years. I'd been a corporate executive. You know, I was on a bunch of boards. I was, you know, I'd gotten several degrees. And of course, you know, you're running around like you are in this frenetic state when you're doing these types of things. And when I was hit, I was always busy. I was just this very, very busy woman. I mean, I had so much going on in my life. And I was so busy that I talked about it all the time when someone asked how you are. I'm busy. As a matter of fact, I was so busy, I was triple busy because I was busy, busy, busy. That's how I would answer people. and for me, it almost became self-importance. Yeah. You know, it was like a badge that I wore. I was so proud that I was busy. You know, I think I was, you know, I looked at my parents, they did a lot in their lifetimes. You know, I think I looked at people around me, everyone was busy. So we were all movers and shakers, right? Doesn't mean we were moving and shaking. I'm not sure what we were actually moving. Excuse me. So I had this moment where, you know, I got hit and I was lying in bed and I was flat on my back and I'm not able to move. And someone asked me how I was. And I went to say, I'm lying flat on my back. And I wasn't busy at all. There's probably a lot going on up here, or not enough going on up here to actually answer intentionally and answer with true purpose. I answered in such a way that embarrassed me, because here I am lying on my back and I'm not busy at all. And I thought, why is it that I stopped thinking about what comes out of my mouth? When did I do that? How long has this been happening? And I had to think about what was I at that moment? And I was in pain. But if I say I'm in pain, is that helping anyone? Is that helping anything? You know, because if I say I'm tired, well, now that's self-fulfilling prophecy. So when people ask you, how are you doing? Oh, I'm so tired. You're just going to be more tired. Now, if you say I'm getting energized, which is, you know, tricking your brain just a little bit, you have to redo these grooves in your brain sometimes. And sometimes you have to say it in order to believe it. So then I started thinking, I could say I'm good. And then I thought, okay, good. Let's think about that. I mean, I'm not going anywhere. I have plenty of time to think about these things. So, okay, let's assess that word now. I've got several hours. So, you know, I thought about good. Well, I think I could say I'm good, but here's the thing. So all year long, now at that time I was consulting, but, you know, you think about when you're in a corporation and you think, okay, I'm going to call myself good. You know, we don't think about that. But on the very last day, on the day of my performance review, I want to be called outstanding. You know, I want this amazing thing to be said about me by my boss. But yet every day I call myself good. And now I want him to call me outstanding. That doesn't make any sense. So I really thought about what I said and how I felt. And I wanted to be outstanding. I wanted to feel outstanding. And so I started doing that. And when I got in physical therapy, when they asked, how are you doing today? I'm outstanding. I'm outstanding. And I was. And I got better faster than most people. They actually had to kick me out before the year was up because I was so much better than they thought. So
thank you.
I'm getting a little frog in my throat. Excuse me.
A fantastic story.
Thank you.
One of the things that I was just hearing in that was this choice of a word or choice of an intention. And I know that that's something actually that you choose every year. Is this correct? You choose a year to orient your life to. Could you tell us the maybe the words that have been the most orienting for you, or created the direction, or what are you using right now?
Yes, thank you. Well, you know, I think about it a lot because I think about the year that's coming ahead and what I'm going to want to accomplish during that year and what I want to avoid. So it's really important. There are years that I know, you know, I've really toyed with the word execute for several years. I'm like, there are things if I use that word, I'm going to have to execute on things that I may not be ready for. So the year that I was hit by an inebriated driver, I chose the word equanimity. Then I had to live in it. So equanimity means being the calm in the storm. That is the name of my company, Global Equanimity Advisors. And that came later because I had to live that word. I had to live it. And I wasn't allowed not to. That's what I aligned my life by the entire year. And, you know, I've used words such as an intentionality, all sorts of words. This year, I used the word thrive. And thrive is a really important word to me. And so it doesn't matter what happens. Here's the beauty, right? So, excuse me. I'm going to take a drink of water just for a moment. Pardon me.
Take care of yourself. This is all about taking care of ourselves.
Thank you. So what happens with thriving is that it doesn't matter what happens. You know, I really want to live a life from the inside out, not from the outside in. You can't allow other circumstances to affect you, right? We know they do. Like, COVID is happening. There are lots of, you know, the political storm is happening. There are all sorts of things happening in our world, but we also are responsible for our world, you know? And our world is really important. I teach global leadership. So, you know, I have to know a lot about a lot of things, right? I'll never know enough. Who could ever even be a global leadership teacher? Because there's so much to know globally, right? And I've lived globally, I've worked globally. I love other cultures. I love speaking other languages. However, never gonna know it all. There's just so much. But I'm responsible for my world. I'm responsible for what I allow into my world and what I don't allow into my world. And that's really, really important to me. So thriving to me is about understanding what I need in my world to be successful, what I need. And I don't even care for that word so much, successful, what I need to be significant. You know, I've been through that. I've climbed the corporate ladder. I've done all that kind of stuff. You know, I've had my success. This part of my life is all about significance. What is it that I want to accomplish in a significant way for the rest of my life? Been there, done that. It was fun. It was great, you know, but now there's another focus. And so to me, it's all about this intention of thriving in everything that I do.
So one of the things I want to make sure that I ask you today, and it has to do with the kindness, and it has to do with the thriving and the intention of your words, but area of work. And I know that you're working in the police departments now in Florida, and that you've been doing trainings to be able to help teach a different way of being. Would you share with us some of how you got into doing this, and then also what it is that you're doing? Because one of the things I want people to hear is that we can make change in areas that have seemed stuck, or the way things are, that someone like you actually is in there right now making change.
Absolutely. Thank you. So what I'm doing right now is I'm actually working with departments. Today I met with the corrections individual, and I'm looking at corrections, I'm looking at law enforcement, I'm designing training with them to help them, because this is a really difficult time in our nation, right? And as you know, I did my first master's thesis on reducing recidivism rates in direct supervisory jail systems. So for people who don't know what recidivism is, it's the number of times that an individual returns to jail after they have first been there. And what's really important to understand is, you know, as one individual told me, there are three types of people in jail. One that is very much like you and me, did something dumb and we're never going to go back because we realize that's not a great place to be. Another individual who's, you know, not grown up with all the advantages that maybe you and I have by having great parents and being in good places and being with good groups of people to support us. And then there are people who are not going to stop doing what they're doing, right? And that's, they need to stay in jail. But that middle group, you know, we can help. Mm-hmm. And so that's always been really interesting to me, even from the time I was a little girl, because my father worked in the police department. He worked undercover narcotics for many years. And then as homicide detectives, was one of the first rape detectives ever. He actually left the sheriff's department when he was a captain of homicide after 20 years. Then he became our county legislator, where he researched jail systems. I was living overseas at the time. The jail that was in my hometown was under investigation by Janet Reno for shackling prisoners and doing some other things. It was a big 60 Minutes thing. And I happened to see it when I was living in South Korea. It happened to come over a satellite feed from AFKN, AFKN being the Armed Forces Korean Network. And I saw this program with Janet Reno on 60 Minutes. And I thought, why is that happening in the jail in my hometown? So I started studying criminal justice. And while I was getting my master's degree as well in public administration, I was on Yokota Air Force Base in Japan. My classmates were mostly fighter pilots. I was overseeing the program there, reporting to the commander of the Air Force Base, as well as the dean in Oklahoma. And then, you know, realized that there's got to be a better way, right? I've got to understand more about these jail systems. So at the time, the direct supervisory jail systems were coming online. We had had the traditional jail systems, which you'll remember, are just when you see people behind bars, but in a pod system and the direct supervisory jail system, they are all within their pods in the evenings. But then during the day, there's a large pod in the center and it creates trust. So there may be one deputy or one corrections officer within that with all the inmates. And it's creating a different type of trust, very different from what you'd see in a traditional jail system. So I think trust is really an important thing. And what I'm trying to do now is work with law enforcement agencies to look at their training, because for the last 15 to 20 years, I've been doing training and I've been doing it with corporate executives, you know, and I started seeing that, especially men, you know, having worked with the military, having worked with sheriff's departments and having seen it in my corporate experience, that men don't go to a place of purpose in their lives. They don't do purpose work, which is really important. And I've worked with some people who are doing some of the most important, difficult jobs in the world. Mm-hmm. Or so we think, you know, a law enforcement has a very difficult job. You know, my father actually later became the sheriff and was sheriff for 20 years of Onondaga County in New York. And it's a very difficult job, right? And so is being in the military. But you'll never do a harder job than going deep down inside and facing all your demons, because that's the hardest job you will ever, ever face. And you know why most people don't do it? Because it is the hardest job. So there's a reason why people won't go there. It's too dark and scary. And it doesn't matter how powerful, how strong you are. Oh no, it's just too difficult. You know, you have to you have to face your childhood demons. You have to face your bad relationships. You have to go back and do a lot of stuff that you just don't want to do. And no one's going to hold you to it. So it's easier just to avoid doing it. And this is what I want to do. You know, we have an opportunity, all of us, for more self-awareness. Just, it's the one thing that we'll never stop needing, right? Is more and more self-awareness. And a lot of problems in our society can be cured through kindness and self-awareness. You know, self-awareness for not just police officers, for all of us. I mean, I've been teaching this through, you know, to people at corporations globally for years, and it's really, really important, all of the self-awareness that we get, all of the emotional intelligence training, so important. And yet, it's much easier to turn on Netflix and watch a few movies, you know? who wants to sit and think about, gosh, why were my parents like that? Or why did that last relationship not work out? Like, this is not stuff we want to do. However, it is something that when we do it, will take us through a journey that is difficult. But on the other side, we're so much better. We're so much better. And, you know, we'll open doors like we're talking about with kindness. Kindness opens doors. Well, self-awareness opens doors because, like we talked about, your vibe attracts your tribe. And if you go through a bad relationship, or you know, you're at a low frequency. I believe in frequencies, you know, that the earth is filled with frequencies. And when you're flying at a high frequency, oh man, the people who come into your life, like you and others, I mean, you'll just be with individuals who are flying at that same frequency. But if you're low, you know, you just got out of a bad relationship, you're not, you know, you're kind of flying that low frequency, guess what? People are going to be attracted to you who are at that low frequency too. And beware, because you don't want to remain in that, because your social, you are your social orbit. So think about the five people that you're hanging out with. And if they're not five people that, you know, that are helping you level up, be careful. You know, that's what this whole program that I'm doing going forward, this mastermind I'm working on, it's all about leveling up, and you need other people to level up and to level with you so that you can level up. So you'll have more extraordinary relationships. So you'll have, you know, better work opportunities.
I love that concept of leveling up and watching who's around you. And I'm actually going to go back again in the conversation to the police, because I believe that there is something for us when we're leveling up, you and I, or our friends, or my circle of clients who are already on a path of the work, or the curiosity, or the desire, even watching this event Wild and Awake, that there's some part of you that's hungry to grow, or you wouldn't be here, right? So you've already opened that first door that says, I'm hungry to grow and I'm ready to be scared. What you're doing, however, what I see you doing is going into places like working with the police force, or the having come from the military, or working in high level businesses, where that is not the organizing belief system, right? Of like, oh goody, I get to grow today. You know, that's for me. I wake up and go like, oh, I get to grow. And I learned that. I taught myself to get excited by that instead of scared. So I see you going in and working with these police, and I'm imagining some of the work is to teach kindness and awareness and working with or interacting with people that they might come into interaction with who are not kind, who are angry, or who are violent, or who they have judgment about. What do you find is the challenge of the work that you're doing in the police system? Like, is it actually how to deal with a crisis event, or is it dealing with somebody's blocks around how to change? What are you finding?
Finding a lot. You know, this isn't the type of programming many of them, you know, want necessarily. You know, it's much easier to go and shoot a gun. It's much easier to do other things, you know, study other things. But I've seen this in action, and this is how it happened. I was very fortunate to go through the Mayor's Academy when I first came to Orlando, Florida. And since then, I've gone through the Fire Academy, the Sheriff's Academy, the Police Academy, the Citizens. These are all Citizens Academies. They have them in just about every town. So it's great for you to check in with your local government, whether it's municipal or county government. You know, check to see if your mayor has an academy. Check to see if your sheriff's department or police department has a citizen academy. They're usually anywhere from 9 to 13, sometimes 15 weeks long. So you go through and you do the same training, right? You learn about forensics in the department. You learn about gangs. You work with the SWAT unit, forensics. You know, you're going to learn all these amazing things. And I kind of grew up in that. You know, my dad was doing take your daughter to work day long before anyone else ever thought of it. So, you know, we'd go to the heliport, we'd have a polygraph test, you know, we'd go to the canine unit, you know, it was, you know, dad, he was in the sheriff's department. So we had a great day doing that and went on ride-alongs. And so when I first came to Orlando, I didn't really know anyone. And I had gone through the Mayor's Academy. I did my first ride-along. And since then, I've been doing ride-alongs. It's been 20 some years or so now. And I learned something.
To pause you, a ride-along for those of us.
Yes.
cool and watch Hawaii Five-0. What's a ride-along?
So a ride-along is when you're either with the police or the sheriff's department. I've done it with the fire department as well. You're actually with them, and then you are a participant. You know, it depends. Mostly you're an observer, unless, of course, you know, they ask you to engage. And so I would just be with the partner that I had. I always had a male partner, and I would just be with that partner, and then we would go on calls. I had a radio and I had keys, and they'd say, if you get scared, you know, run to the car, lock yourself in and call me on the radio if anything goes down, you know. So this is basically what you do. So I'm in plain clothes, dressed in dark clothes that match the department's attire. And I go with them. And so, you know, one of my first nights, I went to a stabbing. We were second, we were backup. Then I went to a shooting. Then I went to a domestic dispute. Then I went to a drug bust. Then I went to another domestic dispute. So, you know, you're really getting this wonderful real-time experience of what is going on in your town. Now, one thing you should know is you don't know a half, a quarter of what goes on in your town. And be aware, if you want to know, you will find out, but you'll never see anything in the newspaper the next day. I mean, what men and women do on these 12-hour shifts is unbelievable. And I think there's a lot of opportunity to help them. You know, we're talking about defunding people who really need our support and help during this time because they have really hard, hard jobs. It's really serious work. And yet there's an opportunity for them to learn even more, because what's very difficult is when a police officer comes on a scene, for example, in domestic dispute, they have two things that they have to do. One, they have maybe, you know, my experience, they have a woman who's been beaten within an inch of her life. Her children are in shock. And and there's an individual who has perpetrated this crime. Now, a police officer is ready to go and deal with the individual who has perpetrated this crime because that is their training. But there is a woman who is struggling and is at probably the worst moment of her life. And that woman needs something in that moment too. And how do we offer that to her, offer the support that her children need when they're in shock and apprehend a violent individual? It's something that's a talent. And these men and women have to do it every single day. And they do amazing jobs, you know, considering the training that they have, considering the support and resources that they have. But here's my intention with the work that I'm doing. The more you know, the better you'll do, you know. So the more emotional intelligence training you have, the more you could reach out to that woman and support her with a few words, a touch, whatever it may be during that moment, while also apprehending this person. But our focus tends to go here because this is what we've trained on, right? So these types of things. Also with de-escalation, so one of the incidents that I was involved in was we were called to the scene of a parking lot of an apartment complex. There were quite a few cars who'd been banged up. We ended up finding 24 cars that had been smashed in various ways. It was because someone had been on drugs and drinking and had taken his big red truck and smashed into all of these before he finally found a parking space. We ended up going to that individual's apartment. He was extremely violent and very hostile. We had to call backup. We had backup there. I was with my partner. We were talking to this individual who did not stop calling us effing blah, 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 pigs. And, you know, you can imagine the things someone says when they're high and they're drunk and it's, you know,
scared
in the morning or whatever it is. And they're upset and scared at the same time. But he was a very large individual and flailing his arms. And, you know, we're sitting in a place that has lines of coke everywhere and, you know, little bags of this and that and more bongs than I've ever seen in my entire life. And my father did undercover narcotics. He used to make our toys. He used to take our toys and make bongs out of them because he showed parents, you know, how very easy it is to make a bong out of something. So I've never done it myself, to be completely honest, but, you know, we saw our fair share of those things. So anyway, you know, this was a drug den basically that we're standing in and we've got our backup, and the officer says, you know, he has to turn to me to, you know, because we're about to take this guy down to the jail. And he said, hey, you want to help? And I said, you know, I'm not going to take the handcuffs and put them on them. He's very violent and hostile. He said, you want to take a crack at it? And I said, sure, you know, what does it hurt? And the guy was yelling at us. And I said, James, before you say anything more, you're at a crossroads at your life. And I'd like you to think about what you're about to say next, because it's going to affect your children if you ever have them. It's going to affect a future spouse if you ever have one. And it's going to affect your parents right now and your siblings and your grandparents and all your aunts and uncles. So whatever you say, I want it to come out of your mouth with some thought behind it. So we're just going to give you 1 minute of silence. And we all just sat in silence. And within maybe 25 seconds, he burst into tears. He just burst into tears. He was sobbing. And he said, I'm screwing up my life. What am I doing? Oh my gosh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to go to jail. I don't want, you know, I don't want to affect my family like this. And all this puffed up chestness is what I call it, you know, when you puff up your chest, you know, you've got a bunch of male egos in the room. No offense to the wonderful officers who were trying to help here, but sometimes it takes, there was so much male ego in the room. There's so much bravado that sometimes it just like you have to poke the bear. And sometimes when you poke the bear, he turns into like a little teddy bear. And that is very possible. That's what de-escalation is all about. De-escalation is just going, what's really happening right now? What's happening? You know, what's happening is someone's angry and they're hurting. Just like today, we're seeing a lot of people out there. A lot of people are hurting, a lot of people, but we see it in anger because men aren't taught to cry at a young age. They're told to stop crying. So we've done a disservice to men by telling them to stop crying. So they have two different types of emotions. They have happy and angry. And they don't know how to show it when they're sad. And this young, you know, he wasn't young. This man was sad. And we started talking about, I said, what do you want to do? What's the dream? And what, no one had ever talked to him basically about what his dream was. And I asked, what is your dream? And he told me, and it was amazing. It was an amazing dream about golf courses. And we talked about golf courses. And you know, the officer had to go and he had to write up all the, you know, the cars that had been, you know, banged up in the parking lot. And, you know, our backup left because, you know, we didn't need them anymore and they could go on other calls. And suddenly I'm just sitting with this person and we're talking about, well, it's like, well, I don't know what to do next. What's the next right thing you can do right now? Okay, let's write it down. Now, what's the next right thing you can do right now? Let's write it down. And he had a whole plan. He had a whole plan of what he could do next. And that's really all it takes. And sometimes we just have to realize all this pain and, you know, all this anger we're seeing out there, it's pain and suffering. And what I realized from spending a lot of time in jails is, you know, who's in jail? Dads, moms, you know, a lot of dads are in jail. So there are a lot of people who didn't have an opportunity to have a dad or had a, you know, or had a dad who wasn't setting a great example, you know, but we all have opportunities to be better and more self-aware no matter what we're doing. And so this is not stuff that, you know, the police departments are like, yes, come in and tell us, you know, we can be more self-aware. It's challenging, right? It's challenging, but it's an opportunity to have us all be more self-aware. So that's why on my website of Humankind, I offer free self-assessment. These are the types of assessments we use for corporate executives all over the world. I want everyone to be self-aware. I want everyone to have that opportunity. And I really want to focus right now on our law enforcement agencies because they're having a difficult time. We're seeing a lot of people who are saying, let's defund them. And I understand where that intention's coming from, right? Like, hey, let's help other people. I get it. If we want to defund someone, we might want to think about the NBA, the NFL, the, you know, the reality TV conglomerates, you know, there, you know, so many people who actually have the funding, like could give it to you very easily. sheriff's departments and police departments, they're not the ones, you know. We can certainly move things around, but there are opportunities here and we need to support them as much as possible, right? And the way that I know to support people personally is to help them become more self-aware, because once we know who we are better people. And we are better spouses, and we are better parents, and we are better for our community. So let's start with everyone, you know, which is why I created Humankind. And then let's work on the law enforcement agencies because they're struggling the most right now. And if we give them the opportunity to know who they are, it's going to help them a lot. And I did this in corporate. I ran facilities for the Olive Gardens across the United States and Canada. I had all male employees until I hired my first female. I had 15 men across the nation, engineers, managers, and then I had a lot of male colleagues and male bosses. And I really felt it was important for people to understand, one, their purpose. So I always started with purpose work. And, you know, brought the heads of major corporations from across the United States together, a couple of hundred of them at one point, and then did purpose work with them and found that I had no idea so many men had never talked about knowing what their purpose was. They think it is their children and they think it is their job. And when their children leave home and when they lose their job, either through retirement or losing it, as many have today, they think their purpose is gone. And that's something we have to rectify. You know, that's something we have an opportunity to work on and to say, okay, what is it that I'm really here for? What truly is my purpose? And then, you know, through different self-assessments, you know, learn more about ourselves so that we are the best person we can be. And then we are the best spouse or, you know, boyfriend or girlfriend or, you know, parent or community member. And that's what it's all about for me.
That is powerful. And I appreciate the way it trickles all back down to us individually and then us collectively. In the work that you're doing right now, which is powerful work, and I hear you saying purpose-driven. For those who have not thought of having a purpose, it becomes a word that's a little like, you know, what do you wish for? What is your biggest hope? Or if you could go to Disneyland, would you? You know, like it becomes this thing. And how, for those who are listening who perhaps are at a turning point, so I would say almost everybody's work in some way has been impacted, whether they've lost it or whether they're more looking at how to sustain or move forward. How would you recommend that people right now engage the question of their own purpose? And given that, is there a way that you could unpack the term purpose a little so it wasn't just like a wish?
Absolutely. So thank you for that opportunity. Yes, that's the kind of work that I do with people. You know, I think I love what you said, you know, it's kind of a wishful thinking. But to me, we have a contract, you know, by the fact that we were born. If we think about how was it that I was born? I mean, not to get into sex ed here, but, you know, I mean, you think about the possibility, the millions of, you know, sperm. I mean, the connection that your mother had to make with your father, you know, in a certain way and how you were formed. To me, just by that, your contract of being here is so, so important. And I think it really is important to me because the reason my name is Faith is because my mother was told to abort me by two doctors, two. And I'm here today because my mother decided not to. She was an emergency room nurse in New York and she was pregnant and was told to abort me. Before this, I was born a little before abortion was legal, just slightly before. And so they had ways of making me go away. And she decided not to. You know, she had faith that I would be okay. She was told she would die in childbirth. She was told that I'd be born dead or deformed. And she took that opportunity and that chance on dying, on me being deformed, or me having some type of issue, And she had faith that it wouldn't happen. She prayed about it every day. She went to a church near her home called Immaculate Heart of Mary, prayed to the Blessed Mother and said, I've never been a mother. I don't know what to do, but I'm going to entrust her to you. Oh, she didn't even know I was a she. She just said, I'm going to entrust this baby to you. And if the baby dies and I die, so be it. And if I don't, you know, if things work out, they work out, but I'll accept the consequences either way. And to me, that's a really beautiful thing that one human being can do for another. There's no greater sacrifice, you know. And, you know, my father was in the military. He was gave, you know, he had a Purple Heart, you know, he served his country and he lost his unit was ambushed at one point. He was a helicopter gunner in Vietnam. And, you know, and how hard is it to walk away with an award when you lost most of your friends? That must be extremely challenging, right? There's not things my dad talks about, but, you know, both of my parents gave life in such a way or protect, you know, tried to protect people. And I think it's so important that we realize just by us being here, that's a contract that was fulfilled. Like there's a reason we were here. Make no bones about it. You know, like you're here for a reason. And just because you don't know what that is, that's okay. That's okay. The whole part of life is discovering that. Like, really, did I know what I would be doing at this point in my life? No. You know, I mean, I've lived in other countries. I've had many different types of jobs. Who knew I'd be where I am today? I had no clue, but someone knew. You know, that the universe knew. They're watching out for me. And I believe that. And so just to me, purpose is, some people say, oh, I don't know what my purpose is. Well, I can help you. You know, that's what I do, you know, guide you on a path so that you can discover that, right? And once you understand what your purpose is, you can live in a purposeful way. And that's really important that you understand a bit about, okay, why am I here? It might not be clear now. Maybe your purpose, you know, you look at someone like Morgan Freeman, right? One of my favorite quotes of his is, if you're not living up on the edge, you're taking up too much space. and I like living on the edge a little bit. And so he didn't receive, you know, his accolades, you know, his great acting roles until it was much later in life, right? Some people are late bloomers. They just are. And some people know what they want to do from the moment they're a young child. I want to be a fireman. And they are, you know, but there is a purpose that we're here. And sometimes your purpose has nothing to do with your job. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes, right? Absolutely. I mean, the job might be the way that it gets acted out, but the purpose is something deeper that drives us forward.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, this work is instrumental in helping you understand, okay, what's at the base of my foundation? What do I need to live the very best life I can live? You know, it's not about what kind of job can I get? Oh, I need to make a little bit more money and a little bit more money. Why? You know, like what's, if you know what your purpose is and you're living on purpose, then if what you're doing is in alignment with your purpose, you'll wake up happy every day. I mean, I'm excited to get up and live life every single day because I'm on purpose. Now, if I wasn't on purpose, which I have been in many other jobs that I've been in, it's more challenging, you know? So
would you be willing to share, just for an example, not to put you on the spot, but how you hold what you see your purpose right now as?
Yes. So I use Purpose Work by Kevin McCarthy. It's a book he wrote called The On Purpose Person. And he's a dear friend. And we do a lot of what he, you know, of his work. And my personal purpose that I didn't even realize until I did this with, you know, I'm with several hundred men in a big room. And you have a couple of word purpose statements, usually just two words, but mine happens to be three. And mine is lighting the way. You know, I learned many years ago, I light the way. And at first I was like, you know, I knew that was it. I didn't know why. I had no clue. What does that even mean? But look what I'm doing today. Like I'm doing the Humankind Conference and I'm working with law enforcement agencies. Like when you know what your purpose is, and sometimes it's so deep seated, embedded inside you, but it's a knowing. It's just that knowing. And sometimes you just need to be introduced to yourself, quite honestly, because you've lost who you are. You know, you start off as a young person and you kind of know what you want to do, or you have a desire in your heart, but then the world comes by and it says you need to pay your mortgage and you need to pay for your car and, you know, you need to raise your kids in a certain manner. And maybe sometimes you get a little off track, right? Because the world is expecting things from you. But what are you expecting from you? What's going to make you happy so that if today is your last day, you know, are you going, I'm totally on purpose? And that was the, you know, that was the type of conversation my staff and I had afterwards. And, you know, and friends and I who enjoy this type of knowing of each other, are you on purpose? Yes, I'm totally on purpose. Or, oh, you know what? I felt really off the last month. No, I'm not on purpose. That's why. You know, it's a really beautiful thing to have the same type of lexicon, you know, and have that some beautiful language for what is happening to me right now when I'm not feeling at my best. Well, it's probably because I'm not on purpose.
Thank you. It's really helpful to hear you explain it in your words, because I think somebody listening might be like, oh, my purpose is to be a fireman or to be a this job or a this job. And the purpose, in the same way as, you know, the word that you choose to orient your year, the concepts of kindness, like these are things that we can implement, right, in our lives in order to be having direction, even if we don't know what our job should be. And so my invitation to everybody listening and watching us right now is that you sit in yourself. You come a little bit more home to yourself in this conversation and be with the question, am I on purpose? And if it's no, to use that as a place to get curious rather than a place to beat yourself up. And I think a lot of people, when they're at this portal right now, it can be a time to think, oh no, if I died tomorrow, I would have not have done what I wanted to do. We'll use that as a place to be curious right now. Oh, okay. Well, what do I really care about? What does, you know, I call it, it's like, you know, what moves the hand on your compass? Like, what is it that moves you, right? Where is your magnetism happening? Yeah.
I think of it as a springboard, you know, how you just said it. It's a great springboard into, you know, 2021. Who are you going to be in that year? And you know, I really believe that, I've talked about this before, you know, I raise butterflies. I've raised 13 during COVID. You know, I just have them on my balcony in a little pot and I watch them. I tape them through the whole process. It's just fascinating to sit with them and be so present to watch a little tiny egg become a little tiny caterpillar, become a bigger, bigger, bigger caterpillar, and then to turn into a chrysalis, to sit there in silence and just become soupy, you know, and just turn. Imagine, I mean, that caterpillar has to change and create wings, you know, and it's like all of us, right?
Reorganizes the cells. Operate, for those who don't know, the cells, everything inside there, it's not like it's a worm and then it gets wings. It literally goes through the pain of like a heart attack. It totally breaks apart, becomes mush, and then it reorganizes. I mean, it's exactly amazing within this, the little chrysalis.
It's incredible. It's an incredible experience to watch. You know, you can't see what's happening inside there, but then suddenly, you know, it'll start to turn translucent and you see those wings. You're like, oh my gosh. And that's like all of us, right? It's like, you know, here we are, we're these caterpillars, we're crawling around, we're kind of blind in the beginning, you know, we're crawling around in this COVID, you know, mess. But look, if we want to be butterflies, it's go time. Like, you know, we can sit around and watch Netflix if we want to, you know, in veg, you know, we can get out of shape if we want to, we can sit around and get Zoom exhaustion, or we can come out of this and say, gosh, COVID was like the best thing that ever happened to me because I sat in silence. And, you know, being in solace is really, really important. And here's what I learned about that living in Asia. So I lived in South Korea and Japan. And, you know, one of the things that happened is when I returned to the United States and I started studying in jail systems, we have this thing in jail, and you may be familiar with it, and your viewers may be familiar with it. What do we do to people when they're being bad in jail?
Maybe solitary confinement or timeout.
Exactly, solitary confinement. So in our country, we believe that's punishment. Yeah. That's punishment. When you get put in the corner and you're told to be quiet, we think, oh, well, I'm getting punished. In Asia, when you are in solitary confinement, whether it's in a room or outside or wherever, do you know what that's called?
Well, I would think of it as like meditation or like a retreat.
It is. It's a retreat, like your beautiful virtual retreat, right? It's called enlightenment. It's enlightenment. So here's the thing. This is a prison. And in prison, there's one area where people are laughing, they're having a good time. You know, it's not just like at the lunch table, but there's a place called the God Squad where people have Bible studies and things like that. They're free here. They don't see the prison that they're sitting in because they believe there's a freedom to their minds. They're expanding, right? And so we could sit in a prison and be totally free, or we could walk down the street and be in a prison because the prison's here. So we're creating this COVID prison, and we need to free ourselves from it because it's just that easy. All it takes is get out of that. This is the most important time. It's like the metamorphosis of the caterpillar. We're in the chrysalis right now. It's so exciting. We're getting our wings. We're getting our wings. Or we're not. We're watching Netflix. No, nothing against Netflix. I love Netflix. But I'm just saying, look at how, you know, it's like that old adage, you know, tell me how a man spends his time and I'll tell you how far he'll go in life, right? So, you know, be careful of who you surround yourselves. Be careful of what you put here, 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 you know, all those things. We know if we eat a lot of crap, you know, you wouldn't feed your racehorse really bad food, right? Why would we do it to ourselves? You know, if you put junk in here, it's just going to come out here. So everything we put inside us manifests. So if we're putting great things inside of our body right now, like we're focusing on our purpose, we're taking assessments, we're finding out who we're capable of becoming in the future, that's exciting. That's an exciting time to be in. So this is our butterfly chrysalis of future enlightenment, if we want it to be. That's our choice, all of us.
Thank you. Yes, I love that. The butterfly chrysalis of life. Yes, and this event, Being Wild and Awake, is covering so much of what you're talking about, the concept, the wildness of coming back, not being necessarily wild, like going crazy and, you know, wild, although I love that too, but actually the wildness is finding ourselves, finding the essence of who we are again, the part that got forgotten for many of us who have lost our path. Some of the wildness is actually to come back in. It could be a very quiet act of finding wildness, right? And the awakeness, as you're speaking of, is, you know, when do we start looking, where do we go to the light? Where do we open up and look with curiosity? Oh, I want to wake up a little bit more right now. I don't like the way my world has been looking around me. How do I open another door here? How do I maybe use a word to guide my ear? So thank you. You've offered us incredible gifts today, and I'm excited for what everyone is taking away from our conversation. There's a few things that I want to say as we close right now. And one is that you've offered us a wonderful, wonderful gift. Would you tell us just a little bit about the gift and also how to reach you for those who are looking to have more contact with you? What is your website?
Absolutely. So I have two. My business website is globalequanimityadvisors.com. Equanimity, meaning being the calm in the storm again. So it's globalequanimityadvisors.com. And also my Humankind website, which has a lot of great interviews like you, Kari.
Yes, I was interviewed for her site, which is all about kindness, being human, and having more kindness. So yes,
they can find that at Humankind, and it's HUEMANKIND. global, humankind.global. And the human is because we're not black and white, we're not red state, blue state, we're not this binariness that we've decided to be. We play in the grays, right? There's this beautiful place in the gray and in the light and in the color that we are. So we're many beautiful hues and nuance. very nuanced.
Thank you for your time with us today. This has been really exciting and fun. And I love the pathways that both of our minds go to together. It's very playful and powerful. And for those listening today, please take what you can from our conversation. Make the parts yours that are yours, that you're ready to stretch into. And I strongly believe that when something, we bump up against something and we're like, ooh, I don't know what to do with that yet. That is a wonderful moment. Stay with that, be curious in that. All of our growth is happening because we hit up against little bumpers in our growth and we expand a little bit more when we look at that in question. So the invitation today is to really be with where our edges are for our new growth. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's a delight. Thank you for what you're doing, Kari.
Thank you.